Welcome to Legal, Legal, and the Coach, a show set to present local and national trailblazers in business and celebrity circles like authors and speakers who will share their stories, struggles, adventures in life, and keys to their success brought to you by Tough Talk Radio Network. Here are your hosts, David Altenburn and Brian Kaiser.
Hello, this is David Altenburn, local Houston, Texas attorney, with another edition of Legal Eagle and the Coach. My co-host, business coach extraordinaire, calls himself the world's greatest connector, Brian Kaiser, won't be with us today as he's getting ready for a special three-day event with Michelle Schism that's about to launch off and help the entrepreneurs out there. We like to say on this show that we try to educate and entertain and encourage the entrepreneurs out there. And in the spirit of my co-host, who often starts this monologue with quotes of various successful people, motivational speakers, entrepreneurs extraordinaire, I'd like to share a few quotes to get our thoughts moving in the right direction today. You know, one of the things is that you can't know it all yourself. You can't be all things to all people. You know, pick your passion, pick your niche within that passion, and deliver more than expected, and you will enjoy the fruits of success. And I also came across some other things that entrepreneurs, in the end analysis, are the doers of the world. You know, we all are dreamers to some extent, but it's beyond being a dreamer to become a doer and make things really happen. So one famous person said that there's only a handful of good ideas that you already know that can govern your life, can govern your business, can take you on a successful journey. First, take personal responsibility. Things change, so always be flexible. Work smart and work hard. It's not enough to just work hard. Serve others well. Some call it service leadership. Be nice to others. Be optimistic. Have goals. Want something big for yourself. Stay focused. Keep learning. Become excellent at what you do. Deliver excellent service, and you will always have many customers. Trust your instincts, and when in doubt, take action. Better to try and fail than to have never tried at all. Earn all you can, save all you can, give all you can. Enjoy what you've been blessed to receive. And above all, keep matters simple. Keep matters balanced. That's in your personal life. That's with your health, with exercise, with nutrition, with the right mindset, with the right spiritual focus. And if you serve others, you will always be successful. Because in the end, we all search different things for our happiness, for what we define as our success. But it takes a lot of courage to not be brought down by your failures. Learn from your failures. And here's another one, and then we'll get into our guests for the day. As you prepare for every negotiation, because in the end, sales and service is about negotiation, focus on the outcomes. What is it you expect and want in the end? Support that desired outcome with data and facts that point to the reasonableness of the decision that you ask someone else to make. Write down your key points in advance. As my father has always told me, when it comes to important things, take out the paper, take out the pen, get focused, write it down, and then err on the side for asking for more, but being prepared to accept less and call it a deal. And in the end, if you just can't get there, be willing to walk away. So we're going to have some great guests today. We're going to have Wesley Wood, who, if I'm not mistaken, has a financial group. And we've had many of these shows where we've had financial experts give their advice, especially in today's volatile market. It's very helpful advice. Second, we have Stanetta Anthony, who's an author, if I'm not mistaken, of Christian children's books. And these are folks that I think our audience can learn a lot about today. Well, we're not here to banter back and forth as we often do at the start of this show, since my co-host, Brian Kaiser, is abstentia today, as we like to say in the law at times. But we should have a great show, and we look forward to everyone listening in to our guests as we can all learn together some important lessons to take our entrepreneurial lives forward, and we can be all that we wish to be. So with that, we'll go with our first commercial break.
Lauren Jano is an elite international certified high-performance coach, author, and speaker with over 15 years' experience helping clients transform so that they are living bolder, happier, and more successful lives. Through a combination of her world-class coaching program and exclusive assessments, her mission is to get to the crux of your issues quickly and accurately, and then guide you to achieve sustained and higher levels of clarity, joy, energy, connection, influence, and overall performance in every area of your life. To learn more or to contact Lauren, go to laurenjano.com.
Attention entrepreneurs, it's time to get real. Real about who you are, where you want to be, and what you're willing to do to get there. To make the leap from just getting by to making real money and making a real difference in this world takes a plan and certain skills. If you are serious about building a business that makes a difference in this world, join Michelle Sism at her Legacy Live event in Houston, Texas, September 10th through the 12th. Learn more at LegacyLiveEvent.com. We will see you there.
If you know someone who wants the legal A-team on their side, have them call on Altenburn & Associates, the Legal Eagle, today. David Altenburn is an experienced and recognized top lawyer in Houston who will put an eagle's eye to protecting the client's best interests at all times. For any personal injury, family law, or business law concern, Altenburn & Associates can help with our connections that count and make a difference for great results. We work hard for the justice our clients deserve, earning client trust and opponent respect, one case at a time. For legal help, call 281-904-6330 today.
Welcome back to Legal Eagle and the Coach. This is David Altenburn, your host for the day. Do we have Mr. Wood on the line with us?
Yeah, hey, David, I'm here.
Good. We've got Wesley Wood, CEO, President of Wood Financial Group. He's a founder of this independent financial services company, if I'm not mistaken, located out of Hendersonville, Tennessee. Is that right?
That's right. It's about 15, 20 miles north of downtown Nashville, if that gives you some perspective.
Well, it's a great town, Nashville, Tennessee, for all the country music lovers out there. Mr. Wood, we've had a number of financial guests, and we welcome you to our show. Our audience is a group of entrepreneurs out there. And so tell us a little bit of your story and on how you came to do what you do today. And in today's volatile market, if there's any particular focus on investments or financial services, please share that with our audience.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, and I'm an entrepreneur myself. I started this company about 10 years ago, Wood Financial Group. I got my start, though. I'll go back to I graduated college with an emphasis in accounting and finance and worked for a large brokerage institution and a captive agency, meaning I was employed in a paid salary, for the most part, advisor, but After a few years, really had the itch just to start my own company and work more on an independent level, which gives me more services and products and more focus on really helping the client, not necessarily as much as helping the company, as I kind of felt like I was in that spot. So It was a big move for me. Luckily, I was young enough. My wife was on my side with me. So after rice and beans and beans
say,
of rice.
It's important to have a good partner. It's important to have a good team. And it sounds like with pride, that's your wife.
That's it. That's it. So it was a big step. But, those are the days when we could really kind of whittle down our finances to, not need much at all on a monthly basis coming in, obviously, with kids and everything else that's changed. But it was probably one of the best moves career-wise to become an entrepreneur and start this company many years ago with my, like you said, with my partner in I don't want to say crime, but in my partner.
I was thinking that as a lawyer, that's what me and my co-host often refer to ourselves, partners in crime. So it's
there
okay.
You go.
So,
all right.
So is there a particular product? There's investment advisors, for example, that work on a fixed fee basis only, meaning they get a small percentage of the overall asset base that they are entrusted with on clients.
Yep.
And then there's those that work on a commission base, and of course there's those that work kind of in combination.
Mm-hmm.
So as far as your fee structure or types of products that you tend to specialize or focus in, could you share that with our audience, or are you just very broad-based?
Yeah, no, that's good. I don't think that there's a best way to do anything, especially when it comes to investing. We do offer commission-based, fee-based. I'll tell you that the last few years, it's a good thing, but we move more towards the fee-based side of it, which, in my opinion, kind of aligns our interest more in line with the client than a typical commission-based sales approach or salesman. Because what you have is, there's not a lot of transparency in this industry. Many people, many individuals don't know how much they're paying for things, how much their fees
uh-huh.
and their expenses are within their accounts, what kind of commissions they're actually paying their advisors. So unfortunately, it can create an abusive environment. But over the last few years, I think it's getting better. Regulatory changes have been coming, and they're continuing to come. So on a fee-based side, what you're looking at is like a percentage of the assets overall. So, if somebody has, $1 million, if we charge 1% to manage that those accounts,
okay.
it tends to work pretty well.
Well, good. Now, it just seems like recently, at least, the market's been pretty volatile. I mean, we've had a 1,000-point drop, more than 5% drop in 1 week, and then
yep.
it bounces up, and then it bounces down.
Right.
For this type of environment that we're in right now, I mean, what kind of – I know – advice obviously is particularized, just like law advice, when it comes to
yeah.
knowing your client and their goals and their age bracket and their economic situation. But can you give us some generalities on how people can, best invest right now?
Yeah. Well, like you said, everybody's individual situation is different, so that's my disclaimer. But, seeing a drop back in the stock market is not a big surprise. I mean, we've had almost a 220% increase from March of 2009. So if somebody was in the market that long, they've seen, $100,000 has turned into $400,000. So it's been a great
uh-huh.
run. And what happens
uh-huh.
with anything is as the demand continues to increase, the value, or not the value, the price of something goes up. And so as people got more and more, I don't want to say greedy, but they basically just pushed up the price of the market to highs that really we shouldn't be at. So seeing a 10, 15, 20, 25, 30% correction is not surprising. So if you believe that's kind of where we're headed and where we're going and what's happened very quickly, like that 1,000-point intraday drop, which is the biggest one we've ever had in history, you really got to ask yourself as an investor, do you have the stomach or the risk tolerance to bear with this kind of recession, not recessionary, but this drop
yeah.
in the market? And if you don't, you really need to reevaluate your plan. I would say most people, especially the folks that I work with, being more in the baby boomer market, retirees,
mm-hmm.
maybe 25-30% at risk in the stock market and being very selective and rebalancing those models are going to be your best bet. And on the fixed income side, if you can get 3, 4, 5% on your fixed income investments, then you're doing okay.
And I hear what you're saying is that you can go with sometimes tax-free municipal bond products or other products that earn more than simple low market rate interest, but it's safe. It's safe, and that's the idea, especially like you say, if you're in the baby boomer kind of retirement age group, safety is more important typically than you know, taking the risk, because if you're young, you can take the risk, and if something doesn't work out, you've got a longer time span to recover from that kind of situation. So what about for young people? Perhaps now just give our audience a little education for those that maybe have never really dabbled much in investments. You know, they've got their home, they've got their employment situation secure, their family situation, let's say, with children secure.
Sure.
And they're in their mid-30s, let's say, and it's like, well, now we're starting to put aside some money and do something. What advice would you give them as far as selecting an investment advisor or getting started?
Yeah, well, the first step is you start. If you start younger, you're going to have an opportunity to grow a lot more money over time. Second thing is just to definitely, if you're not comfortable with or if you're not evaluated your situation, then I would sit down with an advisor that's going to help you with that, because it may make sense to pay off some debt, take the Dave Ramsey approach, make sure you've got your emergency fund set up after you pay off some debt, then start putting money away maybe for college expenses for those children, because you're looking at educational expenses increasing about 5, 6, 7% per year. I know here in Tennessee, you're looking at almost $20,000 a year for just in-state tuition, room, and board. So in 10, 15 years, when my kids hit college age, it's going to be more than double that. For retirement, you want to know, well, what's available to you to put money into. If you're an entrepreneur, you may be able to establish a 401k for you and your employees with profit sharing, which could give you an opportunity to put $50,000 in pre-tax and save you a whole bunch of money tax-wise.
Let's focus on that a moment, because our audience is entrepreneurs.
Sure.
And sometimes surprises me as I talk to folks out there and get in networking groups is that a lot of self-employed people with their businesses, they have so much energy focusing on, you know, getting their business and getting their marketing out there and getting out there, and, you know, they're nervous, they're worried, as any entrepreneur that starts. You know, you talked about your story. Mine is I started, I had 5 clients, and now, you know, 30 years later, we're doing a lot better. And so they often don't focus on probably the biggest guaranteed return that you can make on your money as a self-employed person is putting away, taken from your right pocket to your left pocket or vice versa, however you want to put it, money into a tax-deferred account. Can you talk a little about the choices that entrepreneurs have and the amounts that they can set aside? And that instantly, if they're in a 20 or 30% tax bracket, that's an instant savings of that amount. Am I correct?
Yeah, you got it. So the most traditional for an entrepreneur that does not have employees or has very few, you can look at an IRA or SEP IRA. So an IRA allows you to put in up to $5,500 a year, catch up as $1,000 extra if you're over the age of 55. So if, even if you can start with that $5,500 a year that you're putting into that account, it's your money going in. If you need to get it back out, you can. You got to be aware of some taxes and penalties that go along with it. But just by putting that in to your investments at a 25% tax bracket or into an IRA, you're going to save $1,375 right off the top of your tax bill. A SEP IRA allows you to put in closer to $17,000 to $18,000 a year. So if you can max out a SEP IRA, which is for self-employed individuals, you're looking at a 25% tax bracket, $4,500 of a tax savings. And that's coming right off of what you would have paid the IRS. Instead, you get to keep that money.
And SEP stands for Self-Employed Profit Sharing Plan, essentially?
That's correct. Yep, essentially.
Okay.
And then if you do have employees and you're wanting to offer some areas that you know, help sustain those employees that you really want for the long term, or to offer 401ks to attract people to work for you, then and with a profit sharing type of plan, you can put in $18,000 a year into a 401k plus as much as $50,000 total with a profit sharing portion. And so if you're doing really well in a given year at a 25% tax bracket, you're going to save almost $13,000 in taxes by doing one of those plans.
Okay. Cover that last one. I mean, you've covered, you know, an IRA, $5,500, that's pretty simple.
Mm-hmm.
A self-employed profit-sharing plan where it's just you, it's only you,
yep.
And that's got its limits. But where you offer, like, under ERISA, the Act of 1974 of Congress that said that all profit and pension plans must be non-discriminatory in design and non-discriminatory in practice. In other words, the high executives cannot have essentially a different, better plan than lower-level employees. You can still set up, correct me if I'm wrong, vesting schedules so that you're only rewarding kind of long-term employees, let's call it, you know, where maybe to qualify it, you got to have 2 years with the company or something like that, at least, so it only covers you maybe at the beginning. And you were covering that at the end. Tell us those limits again, that if you set up a profit and sharing plan for you and your employees, how much the executive, the person that owns the company, can set aside.
Yeah, so if you just set up a traditional 401k plan for your employers under the safe harbor, you need to contribute 3% of their salaries into that plan off the top. Now, you can put a vesting schedule with that, meaning that they need to stay with the company. They cannot start that plan until they've been with the company maybe a year, I believe is the most rigorous restriction you can put on it.
Okay.
But once that is in there, then it is a vested amount. As an employee of the company, they can put up to $18,000 a year into the 401k. You can have the option, too, as well, to do what's called profit sharing, which is optional, and you don't have to do it, but you can offer it where you can contribute as a percentage of your overall profits of the company into that, basically, that profit sharing plan within the 401k. And as an executive, you can get a little bit more carved out to do so. So, you know, if you've got a husband and wife team with several employees and you want to offer this profit sharing to some of your key executives, you can, and get up to roughly, I believe the last number I saw was with your $18,000 contribution plus profit sharing, you get about $50,000 into that plan. And then you can put that on a vesting schedule for so many years as well.
Well, good. So, you know, running with those numbers and then kind of simple returns of safe investments like
mm-hmm.
you're talking about, someone can sock away $250,000 in 5 years. And,
yeah, no sweat.
And, 10 years, a $500,000, and there you go. You're now really setting up something for retirement.
Yeah, and, you know, even looking at the tax savings, if you're saving $12,000 a year in taxes, if you're maxing everything out, if you do that for 10 years, that's $125,000 in tax savings that you can reinvest back into your business, where I know a lot of self-employed individuals and entrepreneurs believe that if they invest right back into their business, they can make the greatest return on their money. So it's a great option.
Now, one of the questions that I've heard from various entrepreneurs is that if I put money into these type plans and get into a cash crunch, let's say, and need to borrow, or, you know, can I borrow against, can I get short-term loans from these type plans? What do you know in that regard?
The IRAs, you don't really have those types of options, but like in a 401k, you've got the option for up to $50,000, typically up to $50,000 in a year that you could go get to that. It charges interest, but you're basically, when you pay that money back over time, you're paying yourself back the interest, so it doesn't really cost you anything unless you choose not to pay it back. So you could do that. So let's just say you've got $200,000 in your 401k, your cash poor, and you need money out, you can get up to $50,000 out, and then you can choose to repay that any time, either slowly or all at once, so you could use that cash essentially. The clause on that, though, you got to be aware of is that if you close up that 401k or roll the funds elsewhere and you've not paid back that loan is now a taxable event.
Okay. Well, let me switch gears now. Many, many years ago here in Houston, one of the lawyers that I shared space with had a client, and it was kind of at the beginning of the Internet age, and that client was called Telescan, and they eventually became a public corporation, and they eventually became the backbone, if I'm not mistaken, to the Charles Schwab. And the whole thing with Telescan was for the very first time, and now we're going back many years, 20, 25 years, for the very first time, you could manipulate and study the thousands of stocks out there, and you could study and say, okay, I want every stock that has the highest dividends, and it would list them. I want every stock that has price-earning ratios of X or more, or X or less. And so it was a technical kind of tool, if you will. And let me ask you, in your analysis, in the way that technology has merged with the whole financial world, are you more of a technical type trader, or are you more of a what would be the opposite spectrum or a different spectrum, the fundamental analysis type advisor, or do you embrace kind of a combination?
Well, a combination, but I would definitely, if I had to lean towards an area, I want to make sure that what I'm buying, I'm getting good value out of it. So you touched on price-to-earnings ratio. Back in the bubble that burst, the technology bubble that burst in 2000, you had price-to-earnings ratios on some of those tech stocks up 40 to 50, meaning that they were trading at 40 to 50 times their earnings. So as a simple way to think about it, if you've got a business that makes you, let's just say you have an ice cream shop that makes you $100,000 a year of income, and somebody came and offered you $5 million for your ice cream shop, I asked most clients, would you take that? And the answer is absolutely, because you could invest that $5 million and get way over $100,000 of income. So that's a if you look at $5 million over $100,000, that's a 50 price to earnings ratio. That stock, in my opinion, is probably way too expensive. Those are the stocks that we saw crash and go down 60%, 70%, 80% in value. So I'd rather
buy. Is there a range on price earnings that is a safe range?
Well, you know, and what we're seeing on the S&P 500 is that PEs are still around, you know, 16 to 18 to 20 almost, which is still high. So those prices need to come back down to where, if they're trading closer to, you know, under 10, that's a probably a pretty good buying opportunity.
Okay. So you engage a little bit in price earnings analysis ratio to determine, like you say, safety because it has a fundamental strong value. What are other technical indices that you tend to focus on in your analysis?
Well, you know, it depends on what the client's really looking for, but looking for, you know, if somebody needs income, we're looking for higher dividends and making sure that a stock has paid a dividend, has a good track record for dividend paying stocks. Right now, if you're looking for income, or even if you're more of a conservative investor and you've got the options, you know, individual preferred stocks may be a good fit for you because you can get 5%, 6%, 7% on a dividend, and they're trading close to par. And as long as you hold it till maturity, it's probably going to trade somewhere around that $25 a share without sticking your neck out there way too far. So you want to look at good quality companies that have high ratings, have a lot of cash on hand to make sure, one, they're going to pay the dividend, and secondly, they're going to be around for a long time.
Years ago, it's interesting, but I read a book in parables that my understanding was a fairly famous book called The Richest Man in Babylon. And essentially the message of The Richest Man in Babylon, if I remember correctly, was essentially, you know, save 10% of what you earn and earn 10% of what you save. And if you do that, you will eventually become rich. And, you know, to some people that may seem in today's day trader world to be too conservative, but like you said, if you went from March 2009
the lowest the stock market was after the dramatic drop-off of the financial crisis they call the Great Recession,
yeah.
To now it's been up, whatever, like you said, 400% in five, what?
230%,
Yeah, 230% in 6 years, and so whatever, 40% a year or something crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, that means a correction may be around the corner. But, I mean, do you have a target return that you try to achieve, or is that something that's flexible just with the time?
It's flexible with the time, but also with the client. I mean, if we can get, for a lot of our retired clients, 4 to 6% consistently, especially for income, doing pretty good. For a younger client that, like, let's just say those entrepreneurs that are starting up those IRAs, those 401ks are 30 or 40, and you're going more into equity strategies, and you put it in there, and you're just going to stick it out for the long run. The average, the S&P 500 over the last 115 years or so, the average return with dividends compounding, you're looking at about 8%. So over the long term in equities, if you're going to ride it out for 25, 30 years, you really should get close to 8 to 9%.
Okay. So I guess the richest man in Bab. You do very, very well at some.
Yeah, no, that's like back in the day after the Carter administration in the 80s when you had interest rates on CDs making 10, 12, 13%, but people were having home loans that were paying 15, 16. So times have changed, and I guess back in Babylon they had high interest rates.
Yeah. So now how do you get most of your clientele, since our show's about entrepreneurs and you are an entrepreneur with your independent, I'm very pleased that you've come on our show and shared your knowledge as an independent financial advisor. Talk to us a little bit about how you market your services or how you get your new clients.
Sure. We do a lot of different things, but I'll boil it down to what's been working the best for us now. We have an accounting practice or an accounting firm that services about a little over 1,000 people or 1,000 households, and households would be a home with a husband and wife, let's just say. And on our financial end, our investment side, we service a little bit under 600. Of those 600 is the old 80-20, where 20% of the folks generate 80% of the revenue. So we really focus on those clients that those top 20%, we want to get word of mouth and referrals from them because we want to clone those people. So we do a lot of client events and outreach and inviting clients and their guests to different programs that we're doing. We do what's called passion marketing, which is essentially just being around our clients. We did a golf tournament last week where we had clients bring their guest, and we did a scramble and had a great time, and it gave them an opportunity to meet us in more of a casual environment. But we also have many other programs where we're doing seminars and things just going on what's in the current financial market. But we found that if we can grow by roughly 50 to 60 clients a year in that sector or in that top 20%, then in the next few years, we're going to be at a point where marketing is not going to be that big of a deal, where we can focus more on the really high net worth folks. So I think word of mouth is number one for us.
Yeah, and I think you raise a great, great point. I mean, I was very fortunate to be in a book with Brian Tracy called Transform, and I'll never forget the story. It's a collaborative book of success stories of a dentist who was out in a very rural state and was having trouble with his business. And then he just came upon an idea, and the idea was basically they had a children's fair where, they had ice cream and they had games and they had things. And I think your point about just getting out in the community with various events, a lot of business is conducted at golf tournaments. A lot of business is conducted at events that isn't all, and it really shouldn't be about hard sell. As people get to know you, as people get to like you and talk to you, and you're sharing of advice even on our show, it's apparent that you're very, very knowledgeable in your field, business will grow. And so for the entrepreneurs out there, let's remember this lesson from this interview. Word of mouth is the best. Get out there in those events, networking events, social events, create some events, and you too can see your business grow. So final thing as we go to before our commercial break,
for our audience that wants to get in touch with you directly, what is the best way to contact you?
Yeah, check our website out. We're woodfinancialgroup.net, and we've got a lot of videos and different things that we've published that's available online, and it has our phone number there. Or check us out on Facebook, like us on Facebook, Wood Financial Group, LLC. And, again, we're located in Hendersonville, Tennessee, and have another office in Mount Juliet over the other side of the lake, as we call it. But either one of those is a great spot to check us out.
Thank you so much for coming on our show. You've been a great guest, and we'll now go to our commercial break. Thanks again.
Thanks, David. Take care. Have a great one.
You too. Bye.
Lauren Jahno is an elite international certified high performance coach, author, and speaker with over 15 years experience helping clients transform so that they are living bolder, happier, and more successful lives. Through a combination of her world-class coaching program and exclusive assessments, her mission is to get to the crux of your issues quickly and accurately, and then guide you to achieve sustained and higher levels of clarity, joy, energy, connection, influence, and overall performance in every area of your life. To learn more or to contact Lauren, go to laurenjahno.com.
Live at Choice, where your imagination becomes your reality. If you can imagine it, it's possible. If you can believe it, it's yours. We get it. You're done with the way it is now. You're finished with all the frustration around why you feel stuck and your life isn't working. Imagine what your life would be like if you could have all the answers and see new possibilities. We at Live at Choice choose to make a difference. Live at Choice has developed a proven process and a series of questions that lead participants to the answers they seek, gaining new understanding and self-awareness for both your personal and professional life. If you're ready to get to the life you want, contact us today. Visit liveatchoice.com to get started.
Listen to The Legal Eagle and The Coach each Wednesday from noon to 1 p.m. on Tough Talk Radio Network. Leading local and national experts in business will share their keys to success so that our listening audience can be educated and entertained along the way to becoming all they can be. So whether you're new to business or highly experienced, The Legal Eagle and The Coach with hosts David Alterburn and Brian Kaiser is a great radio program for you. For more information, go to LegalEagleAndTheCoachRadio.com.
Welcome back to Legal Eagle and the Coach. This is David Altenburn, your host, and we have our second guest for the second half of today's show for entrepreneurs out there. It's Stanetta Anthony, an inspirational author from Chicago, Illinois, an education studies graduate. Her belief, and this is very important and very critical to our future, is that all children are capable of learning no matter their physical, social, mental, or psychological circumstance in life, if you will. After all, isn't that the American dream? That no matter where you start, you can finish at a much better place through education. So, Stanetta, are you here with us?
Yes, I am, David. How are you?
I'm doing great today. And please share with our audience. I've had the opportunity to look up your information and know more about you than our audience, but please tell our audience kind of your story and how you got to do what you do today.
Okay, well, a little bit about my story. I am a mature author. Started writing when I was about 49, 50 years old, accomplishing a dream that I always wanted to do. So I wrote my first children's book at the age of 49 and had it published at the age of 51. And so that's kind of like my backstory. And just, you know, no matter what your dream or your goals, you're never too old. You're never too old.
Well, that's a great message. And, you know, for myself as just an established attorney, which was always my dream, I, for the first time last year, and I'm in my 50s, had a chance to be in two collaborative books. The first with our producer, Tony Gambone, that did Share Your Message with the World. And, you know, for anyone out there that's not really been an author, it really is
a fulfilling experience, to just sit down and give some thought in what you want to share out there to hopefully inspire others or help others. And so as you got started late fulfilling your dream as an author, was there a particular focus to your first book? And if you could tell us about that now, please.
Yes, it was particular focus because almost 20 years of my life I've been working in education. And so I'm surrounded by children and still surrounded by children to this day. And so my focus is in on children. And so I have to be creative and have to be dramatic and have to be fun in whatever you're doing for children as well as educational. So I think,
yes,
because, you know, I think because that's my audience, I have to write, I have to think, I have to feel what I think they would feel.
And, yes, and I think you made a great point there, is it's a point that I think transforms even beyond children and writing books for children, which is, you know, let's not take ourselves and everything too serious. The part where you say, you know, you got to make it dramatic, you got to make it fun, I'm assuming that's because as we learn when we're younger and get older, is that, you know, children have got a shorter attention span, if you will. You got to grab their attention, and like you say, you got to make it fun. And so it's not just the message that you're trying to get out there, but it's how do you present that message, really, so that it is absorbed and can make an impact on the lives of those children reading your books. So as you went forward, have you written other books beyond your first?
No, I am in the process of writing, kind of dual writing two different books now. I still want to stay in the same genre, which is children, and eventually, as some years pass, expand into more mature audience. But I want my messages to stay the same, where they're inspiring somewhere. There are some life lessons in there with children. Somewhere there's a life lesson. So now I'm currently working on a book about the loss of a pet. And I've lost a pet, even though I was an adult. I lost a pet. But the emotional upheavals, up and downs of losing a pet are difficult. And so I wanted to address children specifically who have lost a pet. And sometimes we kind of minimize the loss of a pet and saying that it's not important. But to that child, to that adult, to that family, that loss is significant. And so you can't just like you can't replace an adult, it's difficult to replace a pet as well. So that's where I am now.
Okay. Well, and in your years in education or in your first book, is there a certain age group that the book targeted?
Well, the age group that my first book is from 0 to 5. My second book, I would probably start maybe like from 2 to 13, even though the young lady who loses her pet is 17 years old. I would say 13 years old because I would want it in the academic community where teachers understand that their students may go through an emotional challenges during the educational process or having difficulty when they're in school and things like that, and because of this loss, that it affects their education, it affects their grades, it affects everything around them. So I would want it to be in that setting where educators are informed as well.
Well, you know, we started today's show with, you know, some quotes, and the one that was probably the longest that we started with really is a set of messages that probably we all learned at a very, very young age, or we should have learned at a young age, and could certainly be topics of like children's book, like taking personal responsibility and learning how to work smart and work hard, and that working hard only is not always enough, and
being nice to others, you know, treating others with respect as you wish to be treated, and, you know,
mm-hmm.
keep learning and staying focused and, you know, having faith in yourself and, you know, and all of those kind of things. And so I think it's very interesting how the adventure took you from, you say 20 years in education. I'm assuming that was as a teacher. Is that right? Or
as
in administration?
As a teacher.
Yeah.
And I did some administrative work, but mostly in the classroom. I spent most of those years in the classroom. And I'm still not as much time in the classroom as previously, but I am still spending some time in the classroom with students. And so I get inspiration from them all the time. And I really like the quotes that you were quoting, because sometimes as adults, we forget what we were taught as a child, and we get so busy with life that we forsake those moral values, as you would say,
yes,
some moral values
yes.
that we forsake, and we just kind of push them to the side, even though we tell our children, you need to be kind to one another, you need to say please, you mm-hmm. need to say thank you, different things like that. And as adults, I'm not going to say all adults, but some adults, when we get into the hustle and bustle of life, we forsake those things and put them aside.
Yeah, that's a good point that, you know, we got to reassess ourselves and our lives, our balance, our personal lives, our business lives, and sometimes we can compromise those values, as you say, and that's, you know, not a good thing. And so in your book, was your vision that you would sell it to school districts or to mostly to parents out there for their, you know, reading with their children, or what was your thought process that way, and how have you kind of marketed your book?
Well, the with a love story,
what's the name of your book first, let me ask?
Okay, I'm sorry. The name
for
of my
audience.
Book is The Love Story. I'm sorry. The name of my book is
story.
The Love Story. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And so it's actually marketed to the church community as far as teaching about the love of Jesus Christ, and that's one of
okay.
my markets. But I have extended that market to worldwide, where love needs to be shown inside the church and outside of the church, regardless of where you are in life. And that I've found in recent years that although we live in the land of the free and the home of the brave, there are many children who have never heard about God or know anything
mm-hmm.
about God.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is so important to get that message out to them, that they would understand
yes.
that there is a love that surpasses anything. And so some children have not experienced love. We just take it for granted that every child and or adult has experienced love, a genuine love, and that's not always true. So my market has changed
uh-huh.
from the church to parents, to educators, and just different markets. So I'm reaching out to different markets to be able to get that message out and get it out. Because of the way my book is written, I wrote it more of a bedtime story than anything, and I wrote it in a simple manner so you can just grasp it in a quick moment, because everyone isn't going to read a Bible.
Right.
Everyone isn't going to go into a church or a synagogue or a temple. And so that's the realization of that. But just for them to understand and for them to grasp and just for them to know something quick, fast. I don't want to say quick, fast. Yes, quick, fast, and in a hurry. Well, this message is this, and that's what it is. It's simple. We're not making it so that I have to pull out my encyclopedia, my dictionary, my thesaurus, I have to Google, or anything like that. It's just direct and to the point.
Well, that's good. And the thing is you recognize some things that I unfortunately, you know, I see as an attorney down in the family courts that, you know, every family situation is not a loving family situation. There's serious domestic issues that, that children can grow up in households that have severe economic hardships and other issues. And the whole idea of the, you know, of faith and all of that is that beyond the circumstance of our life, you know, that, you know, you can have a faith that carries you on. And so I think teaching that at a very young age through your book, I think was, you know, we like to say that folks out there in so many fields are doing God's work, and you're truly doing God's work, it seems like, with your book. And so it sounds like it was a great adventure for you, kind of taking mm-hmm. all your years of education. And for our entrepreneurs out there that are thinking about maybe becoming an author, can you share a little bit about how that experience was for you?
Well, I learned more things after publishing the book than before publishing the book. I didn't have a plan. I didn't have an author's plan, just like we had plans for our home, establishing a budget. We have plans for our business, how we're going to market our business and things like that. I didn't have that in place. And so I can't say it was a mistake, but it was a learning. It was I learned a lot. And so
how did you select your publisher, and did they give you assistance?
They did give me assistance. I did research. I did a lot of researching and determining whether I wanted to do self-publishing or go with a traditional publisher. And finally, I concluded to go with the traditional publisher because of the economics and things like that. So there's a lot of things as an author you have to make a decision about. It's not just the writing. The writing is fun. That's exciting. But there are other things behind that that you have to make business decisions as an author of what to do and how to do it. And so in today's world, you can self-publish, you can go with a traditional publisher. So it's really up to you. And I would advise anyone who's thinking about becoming an author or in the process of writing a book, it's not too soon to start looking at different publishers, start looking at, is it good for me to self-publish? And if I decide to self-publish, what is it going to cost me economically? So those things, those things have to be considered. Am I going to need an illustrator? If you're a children's author, how much is it going to be? How much is the illustrator going to cost? You know, just different things like that you have to learn. And that I would
also
recommend establishing a plan.
Yeah, it's not insurmountable. I mean, there's publishing groups that for a fee, let's say roughly $5,000, will provide mm-hmm. editing services for you as well. And sometimes those editing services can be invaluable. Like a client of mine that kind of wrote his life story in a book
mm-hmm.
dealt with a group that said, you know, you got to have a couple flashbacks and things, kind of like a Lifetime movie, to make it interesting, you know, as you say, dramatic and kind of grab attention. And, you know, obviously there's different considerations on children's books, as you say, putting it in language that's simple and it's direct and it's fun and all of those kind of things. And so it sounds like it's been an amazing adventure for you. And you say you're about to come out with a second book. What's your second book? It's going to be about a loss of a pet?
It's going to be about a loss of a pet. Have the title. Almost finished. I've been doing a couple of rewrites. That's one thing, too, just doing a lot of rewrites, just changing here and there. But it should be out in early 2016. So I'm pushing like maybe March of 2016. It should be out on the market. And the title of that book is called Kathy Is Sad No More, because It was. I don't want to tell the whole story, but the title kind of gets you. And it's called Kathy is Sad No More. So I've been just kind of working my way through it.
But it's, you know, your first one's about love and faith and those kind of very important issues of life. And it sounds like your second one is about dealing with grief. I mean, I've had the misfortune of an unexpected loss of a daughter in 2006. And if you're never prepared for that, really. But, you know, it sounds like you have a book again that's going to, you know, have an audience out there and can, you know, be valuable to someone, maybe change somebody's life and perspective about things in a positive way. Because, you know, especially for entrepreneurs and about life, you know, character's built through failures often. And it's how you deal with failures and how you come back with failures that, you know, is a true measure of, you know, kind of how you handle things. And
I agree.
So you how did you hear about our show? I mean, this has been a very interesting conversation, and I'm very interested how you learned about our show, because we've enjoyed having you on, really.
Well, in doing my research and doing my marketing, I was doing some marketing and looking for some different avenues to promote my book. And so I came across your show on the website. And so I was looking specifically for podcasts and media outlet things. And so that's how I came across it. And so you came in, and I was like, oh, this is great.
Yes. Well, we've really enjoyed having you. And so how can our audience best get in touch with you if they want to get your book, or if they just want to talk to you about, you know, your journey in the book process?
Well, they can reach me on my website, which is DanettaAnthony.Weebly.com. And then they can also reach me on Facebook, and my Facebook is The Love Story. And then I'm also on Twitter, which is Danetta@Twitter.com. So you can reach me those ways.
Great. Well, thank you so much for coming on. We're going to go to our final commercial break. We've really enjoyed having you on our show, and I hope our audience will reach out and buy some of your books.
All right. Thank you so much for having me on.
All right. Take care. Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
So you think you're tough enough for Tough Talk with Tony Gambone? Tony knows how to dish it out. Can you take it? Tony Gambone is a communicator, mentor, and entrepreneur whose tough style and generous spirit quickly garnered recognition in many a competitive arena. Now he's bringing his intelligence and knowledge to you as a hard-hitting radio talk show host and thought leader. Tune in and see for yourself. Tough Talk with Tony Gambone. It's a sure thing. To find out more, go to Tough Talk with Tony Gambone.com.
Listen to The Legal Eagle and The Coach each Wednesday from noon to 1 p.m. on Tough Talk Radio Network. Leading local and national experts in business will share their keys to success so that our listening audience can be educated and entertained along the way to becoming all they can be. So whether you're new to business or highly experienced, The Legal Eagle and The Coach with hosts David Alterburn and Brian Kaiser is a great radio program for you. For more information, go to LegalEagleAndTheCoachRadio.com.
Well, thank you for listening to another edition of Legal Eagle and the Coach. This is David Altenburn. And in wrapping up today's show for our entrepreneurs out there, our audience, we had our first guest, Wesley Wood, who has a financial group in Tennessee, and hopefully he gave you a little education, if you're just starting your business, on how much money that you can set aside in tax-deferred accounts and kind of instantly get the tax savings of putting that money aside, whether it's a traditional IRA at $5,500 a year, or larger amounts up to like $50,000 a year in self-employed pension and profit-sharing plans. And there's various rules that allow you even to borrow against that money. But very sound advice. And then talking about how you can get a safe return in today's volatile up-and-down
stock market that looks like it may have more downside in the near-term future than upside, given the dramatic rise from March 2009 of over 200% until the recent drops. And so things balance out. And then our second guest is all about the children. Blessed are the children, for they shall inherit the earth. And our second guest was Stanetta Anthony, and she has written a children's book called The Love Story, a Christian-based book that she's selling to churches, selling to parents out there, trying to teach the children the fundamental principles of faith and how that can be a foundation for them, no matter their circumstance from which they come, economically and socially and in their family setting, as they try to start out life and be all that they can be. So we really appreciate everyone listening out there, and thanks, and have a great week. And here's wishing all of you out there the battles of each day, the blessings of each day. Go forth and prosper, and have a great week. Until we talk again next week. Thanks for listening.
You have been listening to Legal, Legal, and the Coach with David Altenburn and Brian Kaiser on the Tough Talk Radio Network. Special thanks to all of our sponsors. If you'd like to be a sponsor or a guest, visit toughtalkradionetwork.com.